Hey everyone, welcome to the 12th arc episode of Medusa's Cascade Collateral Damage. I'm your friendly neighborhood DM Tom, and I've got a few things to cover before we get into the speed run of the next 8 episodes of the campaign. First and foremost, thank you for sticking with us for the last 2 plus years, it's going to be 3 in October, and going down this insane rabbit hole with us. Second, if you can, please check out our social media accounts on most major platforms. Just search for the Medusa's Cascade on the platform and give us a follow. We have some cool stuff coming, and it's worth your time to check out. Lastly, if you're listening on a streaming platform, especially Apple Podcasts and Spotify, please take a few minutes to rate, review, and subscribe. Doesn't seem like a lot, but it does help to get the podcast out there for others to discover, and we would all appreciate the love and support. And also, side note, my apologies on the last episode, I misspoke. Arc episode this week, Across the Plains next week with Nakurawa. So stay tuned if you were hoping for Nakurawa, it's coming next week. But without further ado, we are going to jump into arc number 12. They are not what they seem. See you on the other side. The duo tails the suspicious individual throughout the streets of Nymora for the better part of 2 hours. When they see an opportunity to corner them in an alley and get some answers, they spring their trap. Turns out this individual is a palingard who goes by the name of the Tinkerer, who is tracking a variant version of one of the party members. He explains the situation to the two of them that he's not sure exactly who it is, but he and his partner, who is on the skyship, tailing the rest of the party, are going off of a tip from the journeyman. Together, they surmise that it's likely Salix, and they have to get back to the party as soon as they can. They part ways with the Tinkerer, and the two split off from one another. Shanks goes to the library just before close and picks up what he believes is useful information for not just him, but the entire party, and then makes his way into the temple district to find a shrine to Solinar. Argyle heads back to Zex's parents' house and is eventually met up with Shanks. Hearing a commotion in the distance, they quickly go to check on it. To their surprise, they find that war has indeed come to Nymora. Argyle recognizes the enormous machines piloted by soldiers from Iwi. They are slaughtering citizens en masse, and the duo informs the guards to run and to get the citizens to safety. Rushing towards Zex's home, they inform his parents to pack a bag and tell them that they have to leave. Now. Eventually making it back to a Mr. Big, the gentleman that Argyle had previously made plans with to, quote, magically transport something to the ship where the party was. He now gets the four of them to transport and tells Mr. Big that if he has a place to go, he should get out of here. However, Mr. Big assures them the Arbiter will protect them, and the four are teleported to the moving ship. We find Zex's parents, Argyle and Shanks, in one of the lower levels in the airship, the cargo bay. Shanks uses disguise self to appear as Glad and goes to find Galahad and eventually Zex, filling them in with most of the details. They leave Duo in Zex's room, and an alarm spell is placed. Shanks then begins to fill Galahad and Zex on the whole situation. After a bit of discussion and exasperation, they decide to fill in Glad and Voyas about their anti-Salix problem. With everyone in the loop, they needed to figure out just how to stop the imposter. Shanks suggests that they try and find the Tinkerer's partner, the Tailor. Taking the chance that the Tailor will reach out to them, Galahad takes Duo to the dining deck for lunch. He's approached by a tabaxi that shows interest in the Goliath in plate armor eating with a bloodhawk. Not long after, Argyle and Shanks catch up with him, and the tiefling notices a note that's been hidden on the paladin's person. It reads, "Sweet to be." After an appropriate amount of jokes, Galahad makes his way to the suite where he meets the tabaxi woman, Summer. However, it's revealed to be just an illusion, and Summer is actually the palanguard known as the Tailor. She gets Galahad up to speed on what the situation is with the, quote, alternates, and their relationship with and to the constable. She confirms that the judge, the jury, and the executioner are his lieutenants, and then gets into how to properly subdue the alternate Salix and to get them into Palanguard custody. The perspective switches, and time jumps to 10 days earlier. Salix wakes up in a dimly lit room, aside from the light over them. They are being held by a man named Arbane, who works for Lady Sagewing. He openly revels in having caught them after more than 2 centuries on the run. They meet their alternate and the constable, but things get fuzzy from there. Eventually, they come to inside of a keep, meeting not one, but 6 other residents. They're all wards of the Web of Fate, the fanatical cult that has been growing throughout their hiding. Despite Salix's hesitation towards them, their captors insist that they are friends and on the same side. Eventually, they meet the other residents, or captives, potential sacrifices, and start to get an understanding of just how grave their situation may be. A blur of interactions pushes time forward to meet back up to where the rest of the party currently is. While in the dining area, Salix helps to clean up and begins an exchange of stories of their origins and why they would be sought after by the Web of Fate. They explain that they are a priestess or reincarnation of Daughter of the Void and go into detail about what she looks like. Back on the airship, Galahad informs the party about what the Tailor said, and they start to strategize a plan of attack. In a lapse of judgment, Zex forgets to check on his hunter's mark on the imposter, realizing that they are right outside the room they are discussing plans. A brief, intense pause later, the hunter's mark drops, and immediately, the team searches every crevice of the ship, but to no avail. Alternate Salix is gone, and they left a very taunting message in their room. Zex informs his parents about everything that's been going on with Alternate Salix and Malar, and eventually makes plans to send them back home to Nymora. Glad uses sending to relay to the journeyman all that has transpired, but the spell is not received at all. The group, suddenly worried that they were captured again, asks if she can contact Chico or Welby. She reaches out to Chico, who, in the most horrific, pained voice says, "Make it stop." The group is at a loss for what to do, and spends the next few days of their journey in quiet contemplation and preparation for what's to come. Finally, in the Heartwood proper, after using Speak with Plants again to communicate with Amina, they arrive at the base of the massive tree and begin to make their way inside to speak with her. Throughout their residency, imprisonment, Salix begins to receive visions from the Daughter of the Void. They inquire if it's happening to anyone else, which it isn't. This goes on for many days. During this time, they see an Unalum that is seemingly wearing a dress of buzzing and slightly agitated bees. The Unalum informs them that they are here to rescue Salix. Preparations are made, and more information is gathered. Meanwhile, at the Heartwood proper, Zex and Shanks go to meet Amina, the Arbiter of the Heartwood. She looks just as Zex remembers her. Some questions are answered, but even newer questions are now posed. They learn that Kyver is safe and traveling with a different party. She offers them relief as Nymora is indeed safe, and lets them know that she can help with transportation to Invenice, which is where they must go if Galahad is to receive his piece of the Root of the Heartwood. This is where we leave the party and pick up where we left Ty. More specifically, the moments leading up to his capture by the constable. He'd given himself up to keep the party safe, but knew all too well what lay ahead for him. He is brought back to the Infinity Bazaar, where he spent his youth and trained to be a thief and a killer. This is a strange welcome home, and no sooner does he return than he begins plotting his next escape. After surveying his current situation, he finds himself speaking to the Ringmaster, Olmaz, who, quite frankly, is happy to have Ty back at the bazaar. He is greeted by Olmaz and some old friends. Mors, a hobgoblin, and Bosco, a halfling. The group is informed that they are going on a job. Nothing like getting right down to business, eh? They head off in pursuit of the Cinder Gems, stones that have massive amounts of arcane power and are supposed to be myths. While en route, they decide to catch up and air out any grievances. It's briefly tense, but then is pushed aside as they are shifting their focus to the task at hand, infiltrating the Roview gem mines. With some well-crafted disguises and a bit of luck, they are able to get their way into the main building and into the vaults, where they're trying to procure said cinder gems. The trio sneaks by, deceives, or disengages any guard or trap that they come across, finding not only heaps of gold and other coin, but also coming across several rare magical items. While it's nice to line their pockets with coins and add a few items to their collection, something doesn't seem wholly right about this vault. Things get all the more real when they finally find the first of the six cinder gems locked away behind a door to a dead-end hallway that is trapped to high heaven. Something just isn't adding up. Lack of guards, treasure is more like trophies of adventurers, and only a couple have been found this far. The cinder gems, that is. This really doesn't fit the MO of a vault for a mining company. The group makes their way further while knocking out guards, dodging traps, stuffing their pockets with gold, and slipping by any curious eyes. Eventually, finding another gem, Mors offers a suggestion to Bosco and Ty. It's a crazy plan, but if it works, it could just ensure their freedom. They take the gems and flee, use the gold, and buy amulets against divination, and leave the bazaar behind while Mors runs interference. But first things first, find the rest of the gems, and get the hell out of Dodge without alerting the guards. However, this job becomes more and more suspicious with every new inch the trio uncovers. The deeper they go, the guards, the locks, and traps are fewer and farther between, and the loot in here just doesn't add up. With some creative teamwork, Mors, Bosco, and Ty end up subduing almost every guard they encounter with ease. as they continue to make their way through, they continue to keep things light with their friendly competition and try to one-up each other with who can bag the most coin off of the guards. Eventually, they do succeed in finding the synergems that they were sent to get. However, all this fun must come to an end, and what has been a too-good-to-be-true job reveals its fangs. The room they pass through to get to the last gem holds a statue of an emerald dragon that faces the entrance. As they leave the final vault with the final cinder gem, the statue tracks them across the room. That's alarming enough until the ground quakes and an emerald dragon burrows its way up from the floor and begins to chase after the rogues. So this arc is closer actually to like two separate arcs. First half is what leads up to and is sort of the end of, you know, everything that's leading up to easily my favorite arc so far, the Web of Fate with the party. And the second half gives us a look at what Ty is up to after surrendering himself to the constable. This part also introduces one of my favorite characters, Bosco the Blue, and a newcomer to the podcast, Frim. Best part? This won't be the last time we see Frim or Bosco. So please check out our social media accounts on most major platforms. Just search for the Medusa's Cascade on the platform and give us a follow. We have some cool stuff coming. It's worth your time to check out. Also, if you're listening on a streaming platform, especially Apple Podcasts and Spotify, please take a few minutes to rate, review, and subscribe. It doesn't seem like a lot, but it does help get the podcast out there for others to discover. We'd all appreciate the love and support. We'll see you next week for the sixth episode of Across the Plains, which is Nakurawa. And in 2 weeks for the 117th actual play episode, which is so weird coming out of my mouth. That's what she said. Anyway, until then, safe travels.